So I came to Atlanta with a Ford Explorer. I had four garbage bags, $400, and paintings. And the first place that I went was the Hammonds' house. And there was a guy there named Ed. And
Ed Spriggs?
Yeah. And he told me no, that my work wasn't good. They weren't going to hang it. They weren't going to give me a show.
So what happened next?
I just kept working. And so, you figure out how you are going to get noticed. And at that time period, I begin to look at how hip-hop was operating. And that's how I decided to operate sort of my art career. Because at that time, 50 Cent was coming out with mixtapes like every week. And I decided, like, I would make paintings and give them away, just like the mixtapes.
Any idea how many paintings you made?
Like 300 that I can count, and then just giving it away in bars or at gallery shows. I remember one time I did, when Mocha was on Peachtree,
mm-hmm.
They had that pinup show.
Yeah.
I went there with my car full of these cardboards, and every car in the garage got a cardboard, like a flyer. And then I went inside the building, and I just pinned one to the wall. No price tag, no nothing. So I was pulling a lot of stunts for someone to pay attention.
Did someone?
Eventually.
Do you remember who?
One of the first was Marianne Lambert.
I know you've had artistic collaborations. You want to talk about that aspect of your creative life?
That's funny that you said it's creative life, because that's what it was called. The creative life existed of Alex Feliciano, John Tyndall, and Maxwell Sebastian, and myself. But then at some point, John and I just ended up developing a style that was, it became this conversation. How I met John was that he worked at Tutu Tango in Buckhead.
Restaurant and bar, wasn't it?
It was a restaurant and bar, and they hung paintings in there.
Yeah.
And then they would give you like these Tango cash where you could spend these little vouchers, but I could eat and drink for free. One day they called a meeting for all the artists to meet. And when I got there, I was looking to meet this guy, John Tyndall. I was expecting a black guy. And when I met him, I was like, oh, you're a white guy. And we sort of fell out laughing. And that was the very start of Two Fat Southern Boys That Paint. So we begin to rely heavily on our Southern culture. John had said, one day we should do an art show where there's no wine and no cheese. And then he was like, dude, we should do like 250 pounds of fried chicken and 100 pounds of cornbread and like all the PBR you can drink. And we're like, we're laughing. I wrote it down. And a year later, we'd met a guy named Brady Lowe. He did the Taste Network, and he was like, hey, you guys got an idea? And we're like, yeah, we have this show we're going to do. It's going to be called Redneck Graffiti, but we need like 250 pounds of fried chicken and 100 pounds of cornbread and all the PBR that you could drink. And he was like, okay, I can make that happen. And so he sets up this thing. It's picnic tables. There's all this PBR, and I don't know how much chicken it was.
And where did this happen?
Castleberry Hill. You know where the tattoo shop is? Maya
mm-hmm.
Bailey's tattoo shop?
Yeah.
It was in the building right next to that. That was an abandoned building. And it ended up being one of the most successful shows that we've had, PR-wise, people-wise. And then we took that show and did it in New York. It was probably the most hilarious show we've done, because we bought a bunch of greasy chicken from like some cheap chicken place. We bought chicken, white bread, and brown bags. So in each brown bag went a piece of white bread, chicken, hot sauce pack. But what made it funny was we didn't offer any napkins.
Well, you had white bread, so same thing.
So all the people who came up from Atlanta or were from the South, they knew to hold the bag, put the bread, eat the chicken, and then wipe your hand on the bag. And then all the people that were from New York were like, where are the napkins? Where are the napkins?
Lately, I've noticed that there is a watery leitmotif to your work and the titles of your shows. You want to talk about that?
So last year was, 2016, 2015, there was a lot of police violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like I was being drowned. How am I supposed to live a normal life but still have these concerns or still have a nation who's like sort of lackadaisical? Even though there's video proof, you still sort of have cognitive dissonance. You lie to yourself that, oh, this didn't happen. Oh, if he wasn't wearing the hoodie. And so I began to have these conversations with myself, and it just felt like I was being engulfed. I was drowning. Alan Avery approached me, and he was like, do you want to do a show, this and that? I was like, yeah. All of this work had a political theme, but all of the symbols and the objects and everything revolved around nautical communication. So it's me, a black guy in America, in the South, using nautical flags to communicate an urban message. But what makes this story strange is that the very next day after the show, my big opening, I go out into my kayak with my fishing buddies and I tip over and actually almost drown.
You took some water into your lungs.
Yeah.
Technically, that is drowning.
Where I was in the Chattahoochee. Mm-hmm. So if you know anything about the Hooch, it's fairly shallow. And when I threw the anchor, it didn't catch. And when I hopped out, my foot caught. And when I finally flipped out of the boat, I was in between a bridge pylon and a high current.
Mm.
And since I guess they dredge to build up the bridge pylon.
Actually deep there.
There's nothing there. But it's amazing how fast the human body, the mind, can process survival. In that turbulent flipping, you do see the light.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you have to decide whether you're going to swim towards it or give up. It's just that simple. I lost $200 pair of sunglasses. I lost a brand new fishing rod and reel, $300. And so I sent them on. I was like, you guys come pick me up here. So for 5 hours, I sat alone trying to process what happened. And then I made the post on Facebook, and one of my friends texted me, and she was like, this is what happened to you. And she sent me the narrative of the Orishas and Mami Wata. And in that mythology and in that belief system, she takes the best that you have. And if you survive, then you'll be blessed with good looks and large wealth. And about 2 weeks later, one of the first checks from that show came, and it was more money than I've ever made selling art.